Thank you. We are live with Jay Dyer, and Louise has preempted the comments. I have a massive crush on Jay Dyer. We want more of that, please. Lots of love in the chat. Jay's, all of his links are in the description box below this video. I shall put them in the live chat as well right now. Let me just get them. So we're going to be talking about a lot of topics that are current in the news. Zelensky, the Pope, Fort Knox, USAID. And of course, Hollywood. So whatever questions you've got, viewers, please put them in. Jay's over on X as well, but I'll put his YouTube link in the chat for now. So please subscribe to his channel. He's doing fantastic work. I just don't know where to start, Jay, honestly. I mean, this Trump, Zelensky, White House press conference is like the most talked about thing presently. I've watched it several times myself. I was astounded. I love the bit where he just goes off on Russiagate. This came out of Hunter Biden's bathroom. This came out of Hunter Biden's. What did you think watching that, man?
Yeah, we played it on my live stream last night. We were cracking up because I thought there was a lot of comedic moments. It was almost like I was watching a bunch of high schoolers in an improv class pretending to be the president and maybe an exchange student. Then Zelensky was a lot of it. I couldn't really understand what he was saying, but I think he was saying that if, you know, he said something like, you have ocean and they have beach and it's very nice. God bless, God bless, God bless, but not for long. I think he was saying that you have an ocean. We don't have one in Ukraine and Russia will get you one day or something like that. So it was all over the place. I really like the part where Trump said, don't tell us how we're going to feel. You don't know how I feel. I know how I feel. In fact, I feel the best. I probably feel the most amazing of anybody ever. Anyway, it was wild. I think he showed a lot of body language of like being on the defensive, and he was very much like this. And it's like a little child being scolded.
Yeah, he was saying, you have your ocean, but you will feel it. Like, it's coming to you, like the war or something is coming to American coast. So when he said, like, the laptop from hell was made by Russia, then he just went off on Hillary Clinton, and he went off on Hunter Biden. What did you think of that bit?
Well, you know, the irony of that is going back to when all that was breaking, you know, the New York Times even did a huge write-up that I was reading her comment, Jay Lionel doing a night of Zelensky impressions. Yeah, I mean, the New York Times did a write-up that it was actually Hillary that had all these deals in Russia and in Ukraine for certain, you know, big, I think it was mineral deposits and this kind of stuff. So the everything that they accused Trump of, and I have criticisms of Trump, so I'm not like just cheerleading, but everything they accused Trump of was all the stuff that the Democrats were actually involved in and they were doing. We know about Burisma. We know about the deals that, Biden had in place that Hunter was going to be, you know, the point man for, funneling all this money, taking all of our tax money. So it's just wild the level to which they can foist everything upon the opposition in terms of what they're doing, that kind of projection. And I've read a lot about the history of regime change operations, coup d'etats, how the CIA actually runs these things. Orange Revolution in Ukraine was just one of many color revolutions that they use the same model. In fact, I just finished a book on the very guys that run those operations, going back to the 1990s and to the 2000s, a guy named William Walker and a guy named Kozak. And they're two of the CIA, Michael Kozak, they're two of the CIA point men for running these kinds of operations. But you're right, it includes a lot of corporate scandals, sexual compromise with laptops, this kind of stuff. It's just the same game plan over and over and over.
Yeah, so if we want peace in Ukraine now, we are just Putin repeaters. And that's what like the opposition are saying. It's insane, over 1 million people dead. I'm watching the videos of them grabbing these kids, trying to put them in the meat grinder.
Yeah.
And Keir Starmer here, he's doubling down. He's saying we're going to put British troops, and they're calling for French troops. There is a theory that the minerals were sold to Keir Starmer in this 100-year deal, and that's why Zelensky couldn't he wasn't very cooperative with Trump.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very possible. Keir Starmer is a Fabian socialist, explicitly. So he's a member of the Fabian Socialist Party, which the Labour Party has basically changed its name many decades ago to be Labour when it was originally the Fabian Socialist Party. So he's part of that same superstructure that was included Tony Blair. Bill Clinton was in that same milieu coming out of Georgetown, other universities where Carol Quigley sort of trained up this next generation of people to have this attitude of a third way where they would blend Soviet communism and Western capitalism, basically just oligarchical capitalism where people like Starmer, we in the U.S., we have the same model of people like Pelosi and, you know, the Lindsey Grahams. They go into government service making $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year. They come out $200 million a year or more, or maybe over their lifetimes. I mean, not every year, but it's because they get insider knowledge, insider deals. And so I would not be surprised if that's what Starmer was up to, which is odd because, wait a minute, you're a socialist, but you're going to come out of this with, you know, tens of millions of dollars.
Perhaps a million dead is not enough for Starmer. He wants to emulate Chairman Mao and get many, many more. It's disgusting. Once they stand British lads and they start dying, there's going to be hell to pay here back in this country. So how do you think the whole situation will play out, Jay? Will there be a peace deal or will the vested interests keep the war rattling on?
I don't think that the EU stance can last very long without the support of Washington. So I don't think if America turns against this, you know, it was the U.S. that set up the EU. It was the U.S. that is involved in, you know, being the kind of the power and the engine behind NATO ultimately. So if NATO is dismantled as Trump has been talking about doing, it's going to be very difficult for that to continue on with just the EU countries. So I hope we can actually put an end to this. And my concern at that point would be that if the EU and these entities, the rest of the global elite structure as it exists, if they perceive that they're going to lose the support of America, they may engage in some kind of next level fake flag event that would try to force the hand of Trump, you know, to bring the US back into this kind of support.
Do you think that's one of the reasons Zelensky's head was spinning so much? Because it was previous presidents and the CIA that helped put this whole thing in play, getting the leader of Ukraine overthrown, etc. And he's come back to the very same country that got it in play, and it's all turned against him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you had back in the 80s and 90s, Soros's foundation was allied directly with the CIA to do these color revolutions in all these other countries. So in the Ukraine, you had the Orange Revolution. And when that was successful in terms of a coup, it was these same figures from the CIA, like Walker and Kozak, who had run the same coup in, let's see, Lebanon, Kyrgyzstan. They even ousted Manuel Noriega. And Noriega wrote in his memoirs that it was the same guys in 1989 from the CIA, Walker and Kozak, who had ousted him. They flew those guys over to Eastern Europe to do the same operations in the 90s and the 2000s. So now that the game has changed and a lot of people have become aware of that very stuff, you've had people, Tucker's been doing interviews with people talking about color revolutions for the last few years. Alex, I host the fourth hour of Alex, he's been talking about interviewing people for years about this color revolution model. People are awake to this now. So it doesn't work the way it used to work in the 90s and the 2000s. So it's a lot more challenging to do the legacy system of color regime or color revolution regime change. Nowadays, people can just immediately figure it out.
So there's a narrative being put out by Piers Morgan, and one of the viewers is asking here, we cannot let the Russian invaders have their way. What are we on about? What's your response to that?
If you look at the history of this conflict, you go back to the Minsk agreements, NATO agreed to not expand. And that was what Russia understood the agreement to be. Of course, NATO didn't keep to that. NATO kept expanding. NATO was bombarding Russia to try to provoke this conflict. And so the response of Russia is a response to years of bombardment provocation. In fact, it even came out, and I was at a conference in the UK, actually, in 2018, when we had a person at our conference at AV9 presenting the exposure of the bio labs that the Pentagon was building all around the border of Russia in a lot of different European countries, including Ukraine. So that was one of the things that motivated Russia to make this move. If you had people putting, you know, bio warfare labs next door to you, you would probably make a move. You know what I mean? So the Western media pretends that there was no provocations. None of this occurred. It was just Putin getting greedy and wanting to go in and take the Ukraine. No, that's always been a hot spot. It was a place that in World War II, Tiny Mustache Man, if we know who I'm talking about here, he was wanted to control Ukraine as a hedge against Russia. So it's a geostrategic region. It's a mineral-rich region. It's a place for human trafficking, money laundering. And so it's a region that they want to control as a hedge against Russia.
Yeah, and there's a question here. Let me just go back to it from Bailey. Where was it? I lost it. Well, thank you for that question, AGT Mom. We like to be challenged and go over all of the different angles of things. That's how we learn the most. So Bailey said, where is it? Here we go. Oh, yes. You're getting asked about the Treaty of Budapest. Do you know about that? Signed in 1994.
I don't remember off the top of my head, no.
What about Canada in all this? That will they still be in NATO? How do they feel about what's going on?
I don't know what to make of Canada because I don't know if, you know, Trump was just kind of trolling Canada when he's talking about making Canada part of the U.S. I mean, it's just kind of crazy. I don't know if that's like another version of the old NAFTA plan. I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities. But I think that, you know, whatever criticisms we have of Trump, he's definitely good at provoking and trolling. And, you know, even when he's making fun of what Zelensky was wearing, I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, Canada's an issue because they are also pretty much a Fabian socialist country. We know Trudeau is, you know, one of the worst leaders. He's completely woke, completely socialist. And I don't think that's out of accord with what London as the sort of hub of Fabian socialism for the world would like. But this is becoming so unpopular and so, you know, difficult. If I recall, I don't know what's going on in terms of Canada's elections, but the guy that was challenging Trudeau was, you know, kind of a Trumpish kind of guy, very pro-Bitcoin, pro-liberty, kind of the opposite of Trudeau. So I would imagine they're probably moving in a good direction if they want to remain, you know, a first world country.
Yeah, there's a theory that Trump says wildly inconsistent things to paralyze the people he's negotiating with so they don't have more bargaining power when it comes down from these extremes.
Well, you know, the left actually, the establishment has done that for a long time. They would basically just throw out all of these wild, you know, plans, claims, and that destabilizes the opposition. So there could be something to that.
And for the people who think Russia wasn't provoked, if you're in England, imagine if the Chinese just suddenly started building bases in France, were you know, taking North Sea oil. Or imagine if they were in, if you're in America, imagine if they just suddenly started to move into Mexico and they're getting closer and closer to the American border when the Americans have promised, you know, the Chinese have promised previously we won't budge one inch from X. But here they are, Y, Z, almost knocking on your doorstep. And the CIA, the planners, they knew this would provoke Russia into war at some point. And they just, it's a geopolitical thing where they're just trying to run Russia down. Old neocon, Brzezinski kind of
exactly.
Strategy, the very thing isn't it?
Did in Afghanistan was to get Russia exhausted and run down fighting the Taliban, which became Al-Qaeda. And the CIA, you know, trained, armed, and funded the Mujahideen there. And that was ultimately successful towards the end of the Cold War in exhausting Russia in that, you know, theater of war. And so you're absolutely right. Yeah, they just do the same game plans over and over and over. Also, the issues with Romania. I got an email from the people that do the presidential candidates stuff media stuff, and he wanted to come on my channel, and I actually forgot because we had two deaths in my family recently. So one was a friend, one was family. So I got distracted. I didn't even do the interview with the president or the rightful president of Romania. I meant to do it. So it was a big mistake on my part. But the reason that they don't want him as president is because he's not pro-NATO. So NATO just said, you know, no election in Romania. And they want to build a huge, massive, the biggest NATO base yet in Romania is the reason that that's an issue. So another example of this.
All right, so let's go to this next question. And Bailey, it doesn't matter if the war is lost or won or it just keeps going, because the globalist corporate vampires like Halliburton, they make money either way. Every way the war turns, they make money off it. So Bailey's asking, what is the point of the Ukraine war if Putin doesn't want it? Is it just for power and money?
Well, historically, Ukraine is part of Russia. It's actually the heart of Russia. And if you listen to, for example, that famous interview that Putin did with Russia, Putin gave Tucker like a 20-minute history lesson, all of which is actually correct in terms of how Ukraine was created. It was a Bolshevik era creation to split the country and create these hedges. And if you think about the way that imperial geopolitics works, the same thing happened in the UK, where the British Empire was involved in splitting Ireland between North and South Ireland. And they could kind of manage it that way with a Catholic South and a Protestant pro-UK North. And so splitting countries up like this is a classic of imperial geopolitics. And that's why, from Putin's vantage point strategically, he doesn't need to lose Ukraine and let it be in NATO and let bases and, you know, all this kind of biowarfare labs be set up there. It's also historically a part of Russia. So that's a reason. But yeah, there's actually minerals there. It's the breadbasket of the world. It's Brzezinski said a long time ago before he died in his last book that, you know, it's absolutely essential for the West to control places like Ukraine, because the Eurasian heartland can't be allowed to build up because it could be a threat to the Anglo-American establishment if it did.
Yeah, huge geopolitical significance. And a lot of wars have originated from the Balkans in these areas. All right, so Trump seems to have gone beyond JFK at this point, Jay. Do you think, you know, something could happen to him?
Yeah, Friday when I hosted the fourth hour of Alex Jones, this was my topic. I discussed the possibility of how we're ripe for a fake flag event, or for them essentially just relying on war. Probably the best card in the hands of the global elite, you know, the Klauses, the Bill Gateses, the Jacques Attalis, these people, would be to throw down the card of either pandemic part two, war and fake flag events. You know, maybe something happens in America and the media says, like, you know, Zelensky was vindicated, Russia attacks, you know, America at war, Russia attacks. You can see the Fox News headlines right now, right? So those are all possibilities. I don't know what other options they have, maybe economic tanking the economy or something like that. But yeah, I think that we've already seen two attempts on Trump from the left and from the CIA establishment. So I won't be surprised if there's another one.
All right. So I want to get your thoughts on the Pope. And the headline here is just from a couple of hours ago. Pope Francis is back on a ventilator after suffering two respiratory failures as the Pontiff's health roller coaster continues. What's your thoughts on this news story?
Well, I think that probably Francis, being one of the global elite goblins, understood that his time was limited. And so he actually participated in the last few years of stacking the deck of the cardinals with very revolutionary, very socialist minded cardinals. So I don't expect, as probably many hopeful Catholics do, I'm not a Catholic, but many hopeful Roman Catholics expect that maybe they'll get traditional Pope that's the opposite of Francis, but that's not going to happen. Francis has already stacked the deck of the electors. You're going to get probably somebody who's a sort of a fake faux conservative, so to speak, who might operate as a foil to Francis to keep duping the people that think that this institution isn't completely corrupt. Or you might get the next level of revolution that goes light years beyond Francis. I mean, I view, you know, John Paul II, Benedict as liberals already. And so if Francis was a revolutionary compared to those guys, the next guy coming in might even be light years beyond Francis. If you watch the movie Conclave, I don't know if you saw that, but did you see it?
No.
Okay. Well, there's a surprise at the end where a non-binary person ends up being the Pope. So maybe that's where we're going next.
So earlier on, did you refer to Francis as a globalist gremlin? Was that who you said was a globalist gremlin?
Oh, yeah. He's absolutely his mentor was one of Klaus's best buddies. So, yeah, I think Francis is pretty, I mean, almost everything he's pushed, from open borders to the Stabbies to, I mean, UN, we need more world. He was like totally pro Davos. I mean, he's terrible. Across the board.
So what is the role of the Pope in the globalist agenda presently?
Well, if you go back to the Cold War, the papacy, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the papacy even before the Cold War, but there's a lot of mainline academic texts written by CIA, State Department, establishment people. And Kissinger played a big role in this to basically align the papacy with the CIA. And that happened in the Cold War. It happened essentially at Vatican II through certain really famous Jesuits like John Courtney Murray. And you have basically CIA heads consistently meeting with the papacy all throughout the Cold War. In fact, many of the CIA writers will actually attribute part of the victory in the Cold War to John Paul II, mainly him being shot by Ali Agca, who was believed to be part of the Soviets. I don't actually think he was. I think he was actually working with the CIA and some of the Turkish groups. CIA actually set up Turkish intelligence. And so the organized crime, the Turkish intelligence that helped, they're called the Wolves, Ali Agca get in the position to shoot John Paul II. All that operation did was aid the West and the CIA. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm pro-Soviet. It's just that's the reality of, I think, what happened in that PR victory through the Soviets shooting John Paul II. The whole world said, oh, look how evil the, you know, USSR is. And they did the same thing with you know, JFK being shot by the Patsy Oswald, right? They immediately tried to tie Oswald to the Soviets. And so that's all Cold War psyops in my view. And yeah, that's why the Vatican now is essentially aligned with the entities that the CIA set up, like the World Economic Forum. Remember, it was Kissinger that put Klaus in charge of World Economic Forum and Davos, part of his Harvard research project. Kissinger set all that up.
All right, folks, got almost 1,000 watching live. I'm here with Jay Dyer. All of his links are in the description box. I've just put his YouTube channel link into the live chat. And you've written several books as well, haven't you, Jay? And get your questions in the live chat, please.
I just finished my third Hollywood book, by the way. So Esoteric Hollywood 3 will be coming out in a couple months.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, so please get your questions in and I will keep them starred and keep them coming. What was the role of the Vatican in the rat line that helped the Nazis?
I think that the Vatican was trying to play various sides at that time. And so they were involved in aiding many of the fascists in World War II. They probably had their eye on certain stashes of gold that the fascists and the neo-Nazis, the Nazis had access to. I think that even today, we don't even know exactly where the Nazi gold went. This is a kind of a famous historical mystery. But the real source of that is, if you look into Operation Gladio and the Galen Org, many of those people were also connected to the Vatican, Vatican prelates. And they even, the name of the guy is escaping me, but the Vatican even canonized one of the butchers in Croatia. I always forget this guy's name, but he's like a saint in the Roman Catholic Church. And he's like a butcher of Orthodox Christians. And so I think that the Vatican was compromised even before Vatican II, when you had William Colby. He was stationed in Italy during, I think before at the time of World War II, he was under Pius XII. He was established as the CIA's desk in Rome. I think James Jesus Angleton was as well. And they both made these alliances with the papacy and the Vatican Bank to funnel money into the Vatican Bank to help make sure that the Italian Communist Party didn't win those elections. And that's the beginning of Operation Gladio, where the Vatican aligns itself with the CIA, organized crime, the mafia. And that also connects to some of the rat lines working with fascists. But they didn't just work with fascists. They would work with anybody.
Yeah, so we had the CIA, the Vatican helping the Nazis escape to South America and to America. People like Klaus Barbie, who ended up just as an enforcement arm of death squads in South America.
Paperclip, probably. Everybody's heard of Paperclip, probably. That's all connected to the same stuff.
Yeah, and then you've got a lot of these former German military got brought into the CIA, didn't they? And
yeah.
Used.
Essentially, if you look at today's German intelligence, the BND, it is the Galen org. That's Reinhard Galen, right, from the Nazis. He was a really effective intelligence operator who set up all the fascist intelligence networks throughout Europe. When the Germans lost World War II, the CIA went and just took over all of those networks and made them CIA networks. And they set up the German intelligence network, the BND, out of Galen Org. And by the way, some of those networks are the same in Ukraine. And that's why you've had neo-ins in Ukraine since World War II that the CIA still uses.
And the justification was, rather than working for us, than the commies.
They also gave Galen himself immunity if he would hand over all of his intelligence networks.
So you're talking about Nazi gold. Let's go to Fort Knox next. What do you think is going to happen when they do this inventory check?
Have you ever seen the James Bond movie Goldfinger?
I loved it. Yeah, when I was a kid.
I think it's going to be like empty, right? I think there was some kind of Goldfinger plot that happened at some point. I mean, I don't really know if it's empty. I'm just halfway. I'm tongue in cheek, halfway joking. I don't know. I mean, somebody had a good idea that. They should convert Fort Knox into being a fort where there's Bitcoin miners, and then the whole thing should just be Bitcoin mining, and that'd be the only way that the U.S. will ever get out of paying, its supposed national debt, which is fraudulent debt anyway. But I have no idea whether somebody was even saying that they thought, well, if they go in there and there's nothing there, they're not going to tell us because that would freak everybody out. You have economic collapse, so who knows? And who knows what to believe?
Yeah, didn't Germany request their gold back at one point, and they only got 40%, and then they suddenly went quiet about it, like someone had been paid off.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, gold seems to go missing quite often. You know, I mean, there's like giant stashes of gold that somehow we hear about in history, like it just goes missing, and nobody knows where it is. Anyway, I mean, I don't know a lot or have a lot to say on that, other than that there's. Who knows, man? I wish I had more info.
All right, keep the questions coming in, folks. And Jay is an expert on esoteric Hollywood, secret society activity, Eyes Wide Shut, that kind of stuff. And you can check his three books out now, Esoteric Hollywood, parts 1 to 3. So Bailey is asking whether you will elaborate on the secretum. Secretum?
I unfortunately don't know what that is. I wish I did.
I don't know what that is either. So Rosebud wants to know, is there anyone in this world you trust?
Yeah, I think over time you can get a good gut sense about people that's pretty accurate. You can have reservations even if you don't necessarily trust somebody. I mean, I think a lot of people in power, government, presidents, these kinds of people, billionaires, I look at what they do rather than what they say. And so that's a much better guide for people at that level. I look at people's track records. If I'm interacting with people in media or show business or entertainment, comedy, whatever, most people that I've interacted with, they're pretty straight up. I mean, usually there's a bad apple, but that's maybe one in 20 people is a bad apple. So I don't think that we have to adopt some kind of like overly suspicious, overly paranoid attitude. But most of the time at really high levels, people are, even if they're not personally compromised, they have to compromise to be in the situations of power that they're in.
Exactly. Do you think there would be economic collapse if the real Jeffrey list of clients came out?
I don't know if there'd be an economic collapse unless a lot of the clients were particularly from the banking or Federal Reserve structures, maybe in that sense. There might be a massive collapse in confidence in the establishment, but that's already kind of there. So I don't see that as a very good excuse for withholding this information, because I mean, that debacle last week just kind of makes people more suspicious.
Yeah, Sophia. I mean, this client list now, it's all like the old regime embedded in it, really, isn't it? The ones that were the deepest, like Clinton. So if it did come out, then I think these people are already, these are the globalists that are falling, as the title on the thumbnail says on this video. And it could be weaponized. Perhaps Trump is just firing shots across the bow about releasing things to have these deep staters back off him, because he knows his life's under constant threat.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why they, you know, tease this stuff, you know, in the public, in the media.
It's ammo.
Yeah. Right.
So, Laureen Renee, what do you think of Gene Hackman's death? We've been covering this. It's just got weirder and weirder.
Yeah, I mean, the initial assessment was that it was a suspicious death. You know, I think the dog also being dead is very odd. There was immediate disinfo that was put out yesterday that he was going to talk about Epstein's list. That's not true. I have no knowledge if he knew anything about that. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But I think it's always suspicious when high-level A-list Hollywood people suddenly turn up dead. Not just them, but also people around them, including their pets. So that could suggest a hit. It could suggest something going on. I also know that, you know, when you see some of these deaths that where people are, how can I say this, autoerotic type things, those are also sometimes hits. And the reason that they might be hits, I'm not saying that people can't be into, you know, weird sex stuff. It's just rather that those are great covers for when you do a hit. You can cover the event with it making it look like, right, they killed themselves. And I didn't see Randy Quaid, but I know that, you know, Randy Quaid has been saying that there are, you know, hit squads for the last 10, 15 years. And I think when Rose McGowan came out with her information, people found that to be more credible, because she was talking about certain private agencies that were stalking and harassing her. Black Cube, I think, is what she said. So, yeah, I think this is absolutely plausible. I think a lot of popular people, I don't know in the case of Hackman, obviously, but there are people who are taken care of or taken out. And I mean, just think about an A-list, let's say, entertainer, musician. Their record catalog, if they're taken out or they die in some way, I mean, the catalog shoots up. So there's a motivation right there, right? And there was a comment a minute ago about Hollywood Babylon. I just wanted to mention that. So my books are like Hollywood Babylon, except that when Kenneth Anger wrote his, he was writing about old Hollywood and the scandals that go on, like Fatty Arbuckle being involved in, you know, sleeping with some woman. And I think he slept on top of her and crushed her. So, I mean, that is just a crazy story. But my books are not about that per se. They're about the meanings in the films and the different secret societies that people are involved in Hollywood, how that comes out in actual, you know, the films can be a revelatory thing. So I talk a lot about, you know, the CIA's involvement in Hollywood. A lot of A-list actors have been spies and worked for the CIA, as well as other intelligence agencies, British intelligence, Israeli intelligence, all that's involved. So the books are not like Kenneth Anger's books is just basically about, you know, gossip and Hollywood deaths. But mine is more about film symbolism and secret societies.
So Airy Dispatches is asking, how satanic is Hollywood?
I think that Satanism and satanic cults are popular in Hollywood. I think that many actors, producers, and people in those circles have been involved in different cults, secret societies. Many of them are devotees of Aleister Crowley. Many of them have been just in the Church of Satan, which is a more of a atheistic kind of organization. And then you've got other all kinds of weird Kabbalistic, you know, cults and sects, people like Madonna, Demi Moore, I think. And then you've got Scientology, which, although it's not directly, quote, satanic, I would say is a mind control type of cult. You know, L. Ron Hubbard left Crowley's cult to create Scientology. So, and that's a huge section of Hollywood. So a lot, I would say a lot, but not everybody.
Next question. Did he last bit today with him directly involved with Tupac? Any comment on this?
I mean, I've been following this history and the background of their, you know, squabbles, you know, going back to Death Row Records, going back to, you know, the death of Biggie Smalls and all of that. There's a guy who wrote a book from my publisher, Potash, Drugs as a Weapon Against Us. And a lot of that book deals with the East Coast, West Coast rap war, as well as going back into the history of music. His book is more focused on the music industry. And there's a lot of, you know, FBI, federal informant, gang involvement and all that stuff too. So I'm not going to be surprised if Diddy is involved in the Tupac event. In fact, I think that that's pretty probably likely.
Nisi wants to know whether there's a relationship between Zelensky and Soros or Soros's role in Ukraine.
Yeah, so I think he began the soft power color revolution operations even in the late 80s in the Ukraine and then into the 90s. And the reason that it was that early is that they wanted after the Cold War to make sure that those Eastern European countries, the Eastern Bloc, could be transitioned into the Western financial model. And one of the global elite books that we just recently covered was Jacques Attali, who's the Kissinger of France. He's the sort of the mentor to various French presidents. Attali was in charge of the European banking structure, integrating the post-Cold War Eastern Bloc countries into the EU banking structure. And they wanted to make sure that they could immediately get those countries into IMF debt, you see? And so that was a very key role there. So that's why they had to start so early in making sure that Ukraine, when they started having elections, didn't get people elected who were, you know, favorable to Putin or to Russia. So that began in the 80s and 90s. Even Reagan, right, was involved in privatizing the intelligence, the stuff that the CIA used to do, and putting it under humanitarian aid cover. So a lot of that stuff with USAID being fronts, being shells, a lot of the operations that we're talking about today, including Ukraine, were run out, and Serbia is too, as well, by the way. Serbia was, when they took down Milosevic, it was the exact same operation. They used the cutout, which was called the OSCE, Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe. And the OSCE was basically just packed with British intelligence, CIA, US Naval Intelligence, all these, you know, operatives for essentially for NATO to ensure that they could take down in Serbia in 2000, it was the People Power Color Revolution. In Ukraine, it was the Orange Revolution. So it's all the same structure and model.
Right. I've got a heavy question for you here, Jay. Let's see. From Hushed Tones. How has the Enlightenment trapped both ends of the political spectrum into a crap paradigm? Progressives want a revolution. Dispensational evangelical want the end times. Is this a coincidence?
I think that the best way to understand this in our day is the model of a circle of acceptable political or social discourse. So what the social engineers and the power structure does is they make sure that you only ask questions or discuss topics within a circle. Anything outside of that circle is considered not even a valid question. There's actual like studies on this. I did a podcast with a guy that used to consult at, I think the Defense Department, and he did a whole lecture on this about how the media control works. So any question, like if you were to say question the Enlightenment, that would be a question outside of the circle. It's not even a allowable relevant question. So it's a very tightly controlled discourse and dialectic that's allowed in the media. And I think dispensational evangelical end time stuff is just another one of these control positions that makes you useless, ineffective, and an idiot, basically. All of that stuff, by the way, was set up by foreign PACs and their funding, shall we say, in America, to get people to default to worshiping certain places in the Middle East, if you understand what I'm saying.
Of course. Why is Trump against hardworking federal workers who are not a part of the deep state? That's from Tichelle.
I don't know if maybe she's not in America, or maybe she's, not understanding how the deep state bureaucracy works. It's nothing to do with picking out people who are hardworking. It's rather that there has been a security state establishment that's a breakaway establishment that kind of works as a shadow government within the U.S. government. So this is what really runs the country, and they're directly sort of subservient to people above them that are committed to the globalist projects. So that model is actually the model that the British Empire itself set up for itself, with this inner circle that would run things, Cecil Rhodes, et cetera, Rothschild, Milner circle. And then they had a society of helpers, which was about 6,000 or so academics, people in media, people in business, who were true believers in the faux democracy that the people in this inner structure promoted. And so the same model was set up in America through Pratt House and through CFR, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of the people that you're talking about, they actually are not, they may be good intention and they may be hard workers, but they're working for institutions that actually undermine the U.S. and national sovereignty.
Yeah, a lot of good people are in organizations that have been co-opted by the vested interests. So Uber Fuba, do you think Gulf War One was about oil, or do you think they really believed he had weapons of mass destruction?
Funny you said this, because I just read in a so the two official historians of British intelligence history, Andrews and Green, they wrote a giant book, which, by the way, came out about 10 years after my book. Their book is about spies in entertainment and spies in Hollywood. And towards the end of the book, they have a chapter on the guy who invented you got to hear this, Sean. You're not going to believe this, I'll show you the book if you don't believe me. So this is the official British intelligence history, guys, talking about spies in movies and spies in entertainment, right? These are the guys that wrote the official history of MI5, MI6, okay? The last chapter of the book, towards the end, it talks about the guy who came up with the weapons of mass destruction stuff about Saddam. I forget his name. It's some kind of weird code name. Well, they eventually figured out who he was. And guess where he came up with the fake intelligence for the deadly gas that Saddam was storing?
Was it Israel?
No. It's from a movie. It's purely invented, okay? It's The Rock with Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery. And at the end of the movie, when Nicolas Cage has those giant green balls of gas, that's literally where the guy got it from. And he put that out as intel. Saddam is collecting these balls of deadly gas. And so this is the admission of the establishment telling you this. This is how stupid they think everybody is. They can take stuff from a 1997 movie, put it out as weapons of mass destruction intelligence. Everybody believes it because they've been propagandized by the movies to believe it. And then they can say 25 years later, yeah, that was from a movie and you all believed it.
and they made billions, trillions of taxpayers' money. All right, I'm an American too, and definitely not Israeli. So why are we funding Israel's existence?
I have two talks on my channel that go pretty deep into the history of this. This is a really complex, it goes back to the British Empire. And there were famous British spies who were sent out by the British Empire at the turn of the last century to scout for oil. And this is people like St. John Philby, Gertrude Bell, T.E. Lawrence. There's a whole host of these, right? And it's not just the British, the French, Americans, and Russia. They were all sending spies into the Middle East because this is right when people were figuring out that there was oil. So a lot of it had to, it's not just Gulf War. All of that region has to do with what they call black gold. And so there's a great book by a French intelligence historian, Gilles Mounier. He wrote a book called Black Gold Spies. And we just reviewed that on my channel. That will tell you the history of the whole Middle East, including the nation state of Israel being set up, Balfour Declaration, et cetera. So it goes back to the British Empire. And then when America kind of inherited the old British imperial world control, the Pax Americana, America was in this position where they wanted to have an outpost in the Middle East that was on their side, that they could kind of have an alliance with there as a beachhead against other countries that in World War One, World War Two, and then the Cold War. So there's a long history as to why the U.S. does that, but it goes even deeper as we get into the modern period when Israel has a lot of power and a lot of influence.
Right, we've got 10 minutes left, folks, with Jay. Please get your questions into the chat.
Could I recommend a movie on that too, by the way, which yes. I just watched the movie. I could not believe how it was pretty plausible. There's a movie with John Hamm and Rosamund Pike called Beirut, and it's about CIA station in Lebanon. And the movie is actually a really fair portrayal of all sides of Middle Eastern conflicts, whether it's the CIA, whether it's Israel, whether it's Hezbollah, PLO. It shows the complexity of the region, the history, and it was actually pretty well done.
Erie wants to know the name of the book you were describing. He or she missed it.
Which book?
The previous book you were referencing.
There's a book that a French intelligence historian guy wrote called Black Gold Spies. And his name is Gilles Mounier, Mounier. So I assume he means that book.
What does Jay think about NDEX, a file generated by local PD that can be viewed by all law enforcement throughout the country? I've never heard of that.
A local police department? I don't know what it is either.
All right. Is Zelensky going to get overthrown in his country?
I don't know how that would play out. I don't know if there would be an overthrow. I think they would probably just, the West will probably just, the U.S. will just force him into some kind of deal, I would assume. I don't know about overthrown.
Will it lead to World War III or the end of civilization, i.e. nuclear escalation?
Well, I think that's one of the concerns, is that that's the card that the Western Atlantis' superstructure might play. Seems like, Zelensky immediately flew to London after the Trump meeting. And so the goblins have, sort of converged from Europe over there where you guys are, to try to strategize what to do now if they lose the support of Trump and the State Department and the CIA and all that. So it could be a route they are forced to go. I hope not.
Sky Spirit wants to know if you think that one big player set the Ukraine war up, and if that player could be the CIA.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question. Yeah.
Can you explain the Freemason symbols?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of them. So, if you get like Alfred McCoy has a dictionary of Freemasonry, and he'll go through hundreds of Freemasonic images and symbols, but everything from the bee and the beehive to kind of a top-down control to the square and the compass being sort of the generative principle. Sometimes they put the G in the center for that the masculine male phallus is what generates life. but also that the square and the compass signify the great architect of the universe working with eternal matter. Out of this is an old Aristotelian position. I mean, there's a million Freemasonic symbols, so it just depends on which one.
Have you heard of the Seven Sisters Alliance in the oil industry?
Yeah, this was a big part of what happened in Iran. So the first successful CIA regime change coup operation was the toppling of Mossadegh to install the Shah. And that was run by Kermit Roosevelt. It was a really elaborate, initially unsuccessful CIA operation, but then Kermit Roosevelt chose to stay there, try it again, and threw the original sort of regime, the soft power student revolution, you know, pushing that kind of stuff consistently in the universities amongst the youth. It was successful. So it's kind of the first proto color revolution that actually turned into a real revolution. And that partly was because Britain and the West and America wanted oil. They did not want the oil in Iran nationalized. They wanted a deal where BP could have a certain cut, Iran could have a cut, and America could have a cut. And so this leads to this, what we know as Seven Sisters.
How is fiat money actually created?
It's kind of a complicated process, but the basics are just that they issue an amount of fiat currency that then they immediately allow the government to buy. The private banks are issuing it, and then the government buys it through bonds, or they basically just sell the debt to their cronies. The cronies can then use the debt and use the fiat money to buy up real world assets. So that's the basics of it.
Right. Have you watched The Agency on NF about wayward CIA agent and CIA London station, Ron Burkle of Soho House fame, executive producers?
I haven't. I mean, there's a ton of Hollywood and British, you know, spy shows. I haven't watched Spooks. I haven't watched MI5. I did interview many years ago. One of my first interviews was Annie Michonne, who was a former British intelligence, who was a consultant on either Spooks or MI5, I forget which show. But I haven't seen this one. So there's a million of these. I haven't seen them all.
Will Diddy be unalived?
I mean, if he's involved in a situation that's like a mini sort of Epstein thing, it's absolutely a real possibility.
Yeah, definitely. It depends how high it goes, doesn't it?
Right, exactly.
Right, let me see. We're into the last 5 minutes, folks, last few minutes. Do you know anything about the Pope opening sacred portals?
I think these are just more symbolic doorways. You know, if you go to the Vatican, if you do a tour or walkthrough, we did this last year. I'd never been there until last year. There's all kinds of sort of symbolic alcoves and, you know, side chapels. And there's all sorts of things the Pope does with, you know, sort of local Vatican adjacent traditions. So I don't see much. There wasn't much significance in my view of him opening these doors.
Do you believe Heather O'Rourke passed due to Crohn's or more nefarious causes?
I actually had not looked into this until pretty recently. And it seems like the main questioning comes from the lack of concern about her medical issue. And then of all people, it's the Winkler, who was the main proponent of the idea that she had been abused. And if I recall, he said something like, I worked with her on some show or film, and my suspicion was that she was abused. So the family still maintains, the sister and the parents, they still maintain that there was no abuse. But I don't know. I could see it being either way.
Can you break down how USAID promotes and liberalization of churches and why it's bad and why we should go? How do I pronounce that one?
Ecumenism.
Ecumenism
is the idea that we need to promote and push the sort of merging of all the religions. All the religions kind of believe and have the same ideas. So why don't we promote through CIA money, USAID money, entities and organizations that favor the blending together of all the religions? And especially within the various Christian sects and denominations. Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that came out was tens of millions of dollars given to the most liberal versions of Protestant churches. I'm sure USAID was involved in the Catholic open borders, human trafficking stuff as well. And it's a way for the U.S. to push what it calls soft power or a culture war in religious circles as well. So if you're think about yourself as the state, as the government, you don't want to just push military kinetic warfare power. You also want to project power through your culture, your economy, your, you know, your education. All of those things become forms of soft power. And USAID was one of these key ways that they funneled money. I mean, it's money laundering too, but they also did put the money into projects that could promote Americanism. So it's just, if you understand soft power, read Joseph Nye's famous essay, Soft Power, and it will tell you why they do that and how they do it.
So now the funding has been cut off for USAID. Are you seeing any consequences of that in America?
I missed that first part. What did you say?
Now that the funding has been cut off for USAID, are you seeing any results of that in America?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of that stuff is used for foreign operations, although some of it is domestic too. I think the effects will probably be seen down the road as some of the institutions that were funded kind of go away. So I don't think we've immediately seen all of those institutions fizzling out, but I definitely think we will.
Got a really highbrow question here, Jay. You're going to have to draw on all your knowledge for this one. From Starduster. Can you do a freestyle rap about Sean?
I'll have to find a beat and I'll try to think of something.
Pull some lines from Sons of Ecstasy. have you seen recent reporting that Donbass Russia region has more minerals than the U.S. needs?
I don't know about than the U.S. needs, but I mean, I assumed kind of all along that there would be some attempt to, you know, go after the resources. It's a mineral rich, resource rich region. And back in say 2012 or whenever Brzezinski's last book came out called Strategic Vision. I read that when I was a research assistant. I was just sitting there at the college library desk and reading Brzezinski, and he had a whole section on Ukraine and what the West would plan to do with Ukraine, which kind of tells me that all this was planned because he talked about it before all this happened. It was before everything popped off in 2014. So, you know, it was obviously well planned in advance, and it's, you know, it's all kinds of stuff. It's not just minerals. It's strategic location in terms of Russia. It's human trafficking. People overlook this kind of stuff going on there too.
Yeah. So put one in the chat, folks, if you think Keir Starmer's sending UK troops to die in the meat grinder because he cares about the people of Ukraine. Put a two in the chat if you think Keir Starmer's sending UK troops to die in the meat grinder because he's got a side deal with Zelensky and he's making a play on the minerals. All right, we are at time, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on. Absolutely brilliant, as usual. We've got through nearly all of the questions. Is there anything you'd like to say to the viewers in conclusion? What can they look forward to on your platforms?
Yeah, thank you for having me again, Sean. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Really enjoyed the documentary with you and Sammy. I watched that with my wife the other night. We had a good time watching that. What's coming up, I guess, we're going to be doing more geopolitical lectures. I think we're going to do a book probably for members on the history of the Mossad. It's a famous book called By Way of Deception by Victor Ostrovsky. So we'll probably be talking about that because a lot of people don't know that. It's a very well-known text. Thank you for your audience, for your questions today. Great stuff. But you can follow me over on Twitter. You can follow me on YouTube and all the outlets under my name.
Well, thanks, man. I'll let you go. I'm going to close the show. So have a great rest of your day, my friend. Take care. Thanks, man. Cheers. Bye. What a fantastic guest, as usual. So well researched. I could see how he was resonating with the audience. And we have got tomorrow. We've got it's 8:30 p.m. now, UK tomorrow. Kate coming back on for Grooming Gang Story Part 2, Birmingham GG. And I'll be doing a news broadcast at 8 before she comes on. Jay's books, indeed, Joyce, are on Amazon. And thank you guys for all the questions as usual. If you do click on Jay's links, tell him that you've come from here. Show him some love, the cross-pollination, and we'll get him back all the sooner. It will incentivize him. All right. Much love wherever you are in the world. Going to go and hang out with